shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. Got a great guest for you today. We all know what happened in the EU elections. Of course, the Brexit Party won. Well, not according to Alistair Campbell and Tony Blair, but to everybody else in the country, they won. And I'm delighted to say, and it's going to be kind of odd this to say this, my guest today is Martin Daubney, MEP.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Martin.
Oh, Gaunty, I'll tell you what, it sounds weird even to me. And I think the missus refuses to use it, you know, it's just too weird.
Has it got you tables at restaurants yet? Is it like getting an OBE, or do you not think it carries that much kind of credence?
Well, I was on the Jeremy Vine show yesterday. It was my first media appearance as an MEP, and I did my usual thing of going to the Wetherspoons afterwards. This is an election campaign that's been fought on the streets by talking to ordinary people. These are the places that I hung out before I was an MEP. I like pubs. I like real people. I like real conversations. I like, you know, brusque, robust chats, you know, with genuine guys and girls about Brexit. I'll talk to anybody on the planet about Brexit. And we've been out there in the West Midlands fighting and scrapping for every single vote. And it's just been an inspiring time.
Why did you do it?
Well, funnily enough, I met Farage on the Jeremy Vine show, which is a bitter irony because, as you know, Jeremy is something of a Remainer. Mm. And we obviously agreed on lots of stuff. As you know, I've been on Sky News across the media for the last 4 years, campaigning as a passionate Brexiteer. Very lonely wicket oftentimes, as you know yourself.
Yep.
You're going against an entire machine that's been trying to stop this. And we met there, and then I was approached by a mutual friend a couple of months ago, and they said, if Article 50 were to be revoked, would you be interested in joining a new political movement? And I said, well, yeah, because that's not going to happen. I mean, we will leave the European Union on March 29th, surely. And then when that slipped and we didn't do it and Theresa May betrayed the nation, the next morning I got a call saying, do you remember that thing? Well, we're on. I was like, oh, my God.
Did they tell you there and then they wanted you to be an MEP, a candidate?
Yeah, they did. I mean, they'd obviously done lots of research on me. They just said, look, would you be interested in standing? And I was faced with a very difficult decision because I had to give up all of my work. I work in schools and, you know, they don't like political alliance if it's this kind of political alliance. I do a lot of PR work and it's a very Remain-y world. And of course, you cannot be a political pundit on the television if you're standing a month before an election because the time window was that short. So you
chucked away your salary, effectively.
Yeah, I had to give up everything. So I've been working for free for the last 5 weeks off savings. And I think people don't realise that, you know, because the constant allegations, well, you're just on the gravy train. It's like you only get paid when you get elected, and you don't get elected until July the 2nd. That's your first official day as an MEP. And that might even get scuppered because, you know, they might do some miraculous deal before then, although that seems pretty unlikely, seeing as though they haven't done anything to report of in 3 years.
So what happens next then? You become an official MEP on July the 2nd, or you start getting paid.
Yeah.
Do you expect to get paid for long, or are you hoping you don't get paid for long because you're hoping it'll be sorted?
It's a unique situation. I've given up my entire livelihood to get a job that I don't really want.
We've all had jobs we don't want, but this is slightly different. Go on.
But this is on a grand scale. I mean, you know, we are turkeys voting for Christmas. We don't want to be sitting in Brussels or Strasbourg. Nevertheless, it seemed to me that the only way to affect real change was to get inside, you know, as a Trojan horse and try and get involved. And what that looks like, I'm hoping, I really do hope there's some kind of Reservoir Dogs style 29 Brexit Party MEPs get on the Eurostar and kind of steam into Brussels and we make a dramatic grand entrance. And, you know, 29 MEPs makes us the joint biggest party in the entire bloc, along with our friend Frau Merkel. So we've gone from nowhere to being the joint biggest party in under 45 days. It's an astonishing achievement.
Why? Why has that happened? And how much is it down to Farage? And how much is it down to the fact that there's this massive dissatisfaction with the whole of the political elite over Brexit? Is he just doing a bit of a Trump here? He's realised the dissatisfaction and he's somehow harnessing it and focusing it? Is that what it is?
I think it's all of the above. But make no mistake, you know, he didn't want to do this. I mean, I've been with him, you know, over drinks before this happened. And he was like saying, I've got no interest in getting back into it. You know, you get death threats, you get constant aggro. The money's not even that great compared to what he could be doing. You know, if he was going to America, say, to become a huge broadcaster. And the opportunity was there, but really it was the need. I mean, once Article 50 was revoked, it was quite simply, you know, was he going to stand there and watch Brexit go down the toilet and watch 17.4 million people be betrayed? And then that kind of dovetailed into my own life. And I had some really heartbreaking conversations with my parents. You know, my dad is 80, my father-in-law is 78, my mum's getting on. And they'd all said to me independently, you know, John, that they didn't think Brexit was going to happen before they died. And it really, really got to me. I remember like walking around the garden and sort of choking back tears. And I just thought, it's not fair. It's not fair that the elected representatives that we put in power who are meant to serve us have just treated us as if they are our masters and not public servants. And it became clear at that point that the entire two-party system and all it stands for was a total dereliction of duty. They were happily prepared to just ignore and overturn the millions of voices that cried leave. And I just felt, and obviously Nigel did, that we had to do something about this. We couldn't just stand by and watch the ultimate Brexit betrayal. And the feeling that we felt has been exactly replicated amongst the voters. The results speak for themselves. Mm. You can now walk from the tip of Northumberland to Land's End without passing through a single territory that isn't Brexit Party territory. Look at the political map of the UK. It's been radically transformed overnight. And that is because people are sick of Westminster. They're sick of being treated like racists, like idiots, like xenophobes, like backward Little Englanders. And here's the great thing about democracy, John. Every single vote counts for the same. My vote counts for the same as Boris Johnson's vote. And when you get enough people with enough passion on side at the same time, you can overturn, you know, these pillars of society.
OK, let's go on to the public in a moment. Let's go on to where Brexit goes next and where the Brexit Party. But let's just stay on that personal for a minute. What's your mum and dad said now and your relatives now you are elected?
I mean, you know, we did a rally. We've been doing rallies all around the country. We've been all over the place. I mean, Nigel's been the hardest working politician I can ever remember in my life. And I did mine because I'm standing in the West Midlands at Willenhall near Wolverhampton. 3,000 people were there. And my parents and my auntie and uncle and my nephew, who'd flown in from Texas, came over in a minibus, like a kind of football away day. And they were in the audience. And they were getting interviewed by the New York Post and the Tokyo Times. And, you know, the BBC weren't there. It was amazing, and they were standing up and crying with happiness. And I realised at that moment I'd made the right decision, because it's a very, very difficult decision. Because make no bones about it, you know, the establishment, the media establishment, are entirely against this, and it takes guts to stand up and do it.
So, what's your normal politics?
Before this, you know, I mean, I'm a coal miner's son from Nottingham, as you know. I was born Labour, and I thought I was red till I was dead. I just thought that was the way things went, and then round about the Miliband era, I think it became abundantly clear that the kind of liberal Islington socialist elite didn't give a monkey's about the communities where I was from, all the communities of the north, the northwest, the Midlands, you know, all those runs through there and down into Cornwall, they'd all been abandoned. And it became clear that we didn't really know who to vote for anymore. And then we saw next the rise of UKIP. Now, my parents went UKIP straight away. I never voted for Nigel. I've been saying since the start, I've never voted for Nigel Farage. I've never voted for UKIP. I was just kind of faffing around with a little Liberal Democrat thing there. A Women's and Equality Party, I voted for them. It felt like might as well, a bit of fun. And then when the Brexit Party came along, I think like millions of people, it was almost like, yeah, this is me. This is me. Okay. Because it's no longer about left or right. It's about right or wrong. And Brexit is the simple defining topic of our time. Are you with us or against us? And everything else really is immaterial. And that's reflected in the candidates that stood. Well, yeah, we've got lifelong conservatives. We've got someone from the Communist Party. I mean, you cannot find a more politically diverse movement than this, because we're all brought together by Brexit and, more to the point, democracy.
So what about the argument that's going to be levelled at you, is already levelled at you, that you're bigots, you're Little Englanders and that you're racist?
I think there's no easier way to defy that ludicrous proposition than to look at the candidates. I mean, in the West Midlands, Laura, she's a Jew. Her parents died in the gas chambers. And she stood on the stage at Willen Hall and told that story of how she despises fascism, you know, and she believes in democracy. She was forced to live in communist regimes where democracy meant waving at processions as they went past. And she felt that, that Brexit was like communist oppression. Next, we have Vishal, my fellow candidate, the son of an Indian immigrant who worked all around the clock to get a corner shot to put his boy through university. I could go on. We've got
But what about the argument? Come on, Lena, we're mates, but I can't let you get away with that. What about the accusations about Farage and the infamous poster and that, you know, that somehow his past is very anti-immigrant and very anti-Muslim even, or certainly anti this amount of refugees who were coming into the country. That poster has upset a lot of people. Didn't upset me, but upset a lot of other people. What do you think?
That poster, you know, Nigel has been asked about many times. I mean, it's worth pointing out that, that no other politician seems to get asked about something they said 10 years ago or tweeted 3 years ago than Nigel. But that poster in particular, of course, you know, draws chagrin. And what he says is that at that time, you know, the immigration crisis was the single defining moment politically of the era. And that poster exemplified that movement. Now, would it be appropriate to do it now? No, it wouldn't, because, you know, Jeremy Corbyn was on the Andrew Marr show last week saying that Nigel's entire campaign has been fueled by anti-immigrant sentiment. I can tell you this for free, it hasn't even been mentioned. It hasn't been mentioned because it's immaterial. You know, the defining moment of our time now is Brexit, and the defining moment of that time was immigration.
Well, the other brick they throw at you, and Andrew Marr, of course, loved doing this, was the fact, or where's the money come from? What do you know about that?
Well, I know what everybody knows, and that is we are totally public about this. It's been an amazing story of how ordinary people have joined up as registered supporters at £25 a pop. We've now got over 110,000 people. We're about to supersede the Tory party membership. I mean, think about that. In 6 weeks, we're going to be bigger than the Tory party.
Yeah, but is it a party or is it a cult of Nigel Farage? There's no committees. There's no representation. How are ordinary... No, they're not members, are they? Supporters going to get their voices heard?
Well, here's the next exciting thing. So what we plan to do is to allow members to participate in democracy and policy formation. So we had an amazing meeting the other day, because another thing we're criticised about is, well, where's your manifesto? Where's your policy platform? And I can assure you that's coming soon. That's being worked on right now.
I thought Nigel said he didn't want a manifesto. They're full of lies.
No, but that was just the terminology. He was calling it a policy platform or a contract with the people. So it won't be called a manifesto, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
The point is, people will be allowed to participate. So we will be directly asking those registered members, what is it that you want to talk about? What's your position on this? What's your position on that? And we're going to listen. And that's never been done before by a political party. You know, politics is normally a few autocrats sitting in a room and deciding what to do. And then it feeds downwards at us and kind of politics washes over us. It just happens to us. But we want people to be directly involved in this. And it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah,
direct hands-on involvement that's never been done before.
But with the greatest respect, Martin, I'm old enough to remember when that hymn sheet was being sung by the Liberal Democrats. This is about local power and power upwards. Is that really going to happen with somebody like Farage at the top? We know he likes to be number one. I know. I've known the man for years and years. He doesn't like anybody else to share that platform, does he? He's always going to be the leader. It's the cult of Nigel.
No, it's not. Look, every political movement needs a leader. And I don't think anybody could have done what's been achieved in the past 6 weeks other than Nigel. I mean, let's be honest. You know, he has been that rallying call. But as far as democratic involvement of ourselves as candidates and moving forward as MPs and also members, it's been made abundantly clear this is an open conversation and we're very much looking forward to that. We have lots of different voices, of course, so it's going to be a lot to manage, but that's the challenge. You know, we live in kind of inclusive times, and that's really greatly enabled by technology. I mean, we can talk to our people within seconds.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I thought the social media campaign was outstanding. Who was behind that, and where did they learn those techniques? It was like Momentum did for Corbyn a few years ago.
Yeah, we have this amazing... So the first day I went to Party HQ, I walked through this room, and it was just full of teenagers tapping away in silence. I was like, what's going on here? And then went upstairs to the business end where Nigel was. And that was the social media team. And right from the beginning, they decided to do this incredibly forward-thinking, positive, content-driven social media platform utilizing Facebook and Twitter. And what they've been doing is churning out content, you know, inspiring positive content that's been shared so many times. The social media output of the Brexit Party has been double our entire rivals combined.
Sure. Oh, it has. It's been brilliant. But who's the brains behind it? Because I know Farage can hardly handle a smartphone. So who is the brains? Is there one person doing this? Is there an M, so to speak? Is it M in, or Q, isn't it, in James Bond? Who is behind it?
Well, there's a whole team working on it. But if you go online, I think his name is Andrew. I should know.
Don't worry. But there is one person who's masterminding it, yeah?
Well, there's a social media manager. But this idea came from travelling to meet the Five Star Movement in Italy, because they did an incredible piece of work when they rose to power. And what we realised early on was that if we were going to try and utilise the traditional media, then we were going to be up against it. Because as we know,
absolutely,
you know, they're not, they don't want to usher in the end of the establishment, because they are part of the establishment. So you have to think clever, and we decided to build our entirely our own platform where we can produce content, you know, highly polished, slick video content, lots of it, lots of rallies around the country that were live streamed, so people felt that they were involved and they could comment. Every town walkabout was filmed, and people just felt they were part of the movement. It's an incredibly involving and hands-on way of doing politics, and it completely bypasses the mainstream media and the traditional press, and it made them frankly look outdated dinosaurs.
It certainly did. We'll talk more about that in a few moments, Martin. You're listening to Sputnik International, Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, with my special guest, a brand new MEP for the Brexit Party, Martin Daubney. I want to go on and talk about the fact that Alastair Campbell and indeed Tony Blair say the Brexit Party didn't win. I want to talk more about the mainstream media and the coverage. And of course, we've got to get down to talking about Peterborough, which is the next big test, that by-election for Farage and indeed for the Brexit Party. Don't go away, there's plenty more to come. This is John Gaunt, this is Sputnik International, and this is my special guest today, Martin Daubney, MEP for the Brexit Party.
Shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
OK, welcome back to the second part of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt. I've still got Martin Daubney with you. Martin, let's just go on to that then. You decided, you said, to go over the heads of the mainstream media. Do you believe you were fighting the MSM as well as all the political parties?
Yes. I mean, on the one hand, people endlessly complained that, well, Nigel was all over Question Time. He was all over Newsnight. I mean, he was everywhere. But the thing to understand is that, you know, we are the only party fighting for a no-deal Brexit. And so what happens is, and I've been part of this myself, I've been on Daily Politics Live, I've been doing all sorts of panel shows, and the state of the matter is, you know, you are always the only Brexiteer on the panel. It's been this way for 4 years, but during the actual campaign itself, it was so nakedly obvious that you were going against the machine. And not only that, but the line of questioning that Brexiteers were faced was incredibly intense. I mean, when Nigel was on the Mar show and they were just digging up every piece of dirt from the past, I mean, that was never done towards any of the other alternative leaders. And so we can see that there is a particular venom, I think, in going towards the Brexit Party members and candidates. But what happened was something really, really interesting, and that is it not only didn't work, but it increased the popularity of our party, because people that are voting for this party and people that support the Leave movement, they felt alienated themselves as individuals, as members of the public for the past 3 years. They felt despised by the press themselves. And so when our party members and candidates and our party leader was attacked on TV and radio, it actually made them rally around. It tapped into that great sense of, you know, the British underdog fighting back, you know, against the underbelly of the system. And it actually made us more popular. So it's been, I think there'll be theses written about the media treatment and how we won this, because the old smear techniques have just bounced off the armour.
So where does it go next then? Let's talk about Campbell and Blair. They both say that you lost.
Well, they would do, because, you know, we've proven time and time again that what we can say about Remainers is they won't accept the loss of any campaign. they won't accept any vote. And it kind of belies the fact that a second referendum, which I'm dead against, obviously, would be a disaster because they wouldn't accept that if they lost the game, which I believe they would.
Yeah, but if you think you'd win again, then there's no reason why not to have it, some people would say.
Some people would say that, but I believe that we've had the vote. You know, it was clear in its mandate. And what's happened since is that the entire political establishment has refused to listen to the people. So this isn't about Brexit anymore. It's about democracy and making them do it.
But what about the fact that Alistair Campbell said this on... I was watching it live and I went crazy because I knew exactly what game he was up to. When he said you add up all the other parties, then actually Remain has won. Before you know it... I mean, don't forget, of course, the BBC were always spitting feathers anyway before that because they saw the way the wind was going. But then it became the headline. Then it was on Sky. Then I watched Channel 4 News the day after. The whole of their programme was based on the premise that you lot had lost and Remain had won. How do they get away with it? They're publicly funded. So are the BBC.
I must confess, I came back from the ICC in Birmingham where I'd just been elected as an MEP and, you know, three of us got through and it was a resounding victory. And I switched the TV on in my hotel room and there was Campbell, you know, a political corpse, you know, saying the same thing. There were six people on a BBC panel and not a single Brexiteer. And they were saying, well, let's add up all these things. And look, if you add up the SNP and the Lib Dems and the Greens and Change UK, then actually this is a mandate to Remain. And you're like, oh, my God. So why don't we go back in time and add up all the London football teams in the Premier League, and actually Man City didn't win the Premier League. Is that how we're doing it now? It's pathetic.
Let me just ask you then, you'd say about walking in there like reservoir dogs, and I love that kind of image, but there's only 29 of you. You are going to be the biggest group. We can't take that away. But surely they'll just ignore you because that's what they've always done. They allow Nigel to do a little bit about damp rags or whatever, and then they just carry on with business as usual. We're talking about the mafia here.
Well, I mean, they tried to ignore us before and look where it's got them. And it's not only a matter of 29 MEPs from the Brexit Party rocking up, but, you know, look at the political landscape of the entire bloc. It's changed, and it's changed a lot. You know, for the first time, the ruling bloc, the majority bloc, has lost its majority. So we live in times where we're going to be looking to see who's on the ticket elsewhere. Can we form alliances and can we affect change from within by being smart on a European level? But back to a domestic level, make no mistake, we are gearing up now for Westminster. You know, Brexit is just the beginning.
OK, let me ask you about that, because that's the next big test, isn't it? Peterborough is the big test. Are you confident that the Brexit Party is going to win it? You should do. A self-made man standing as the candidate, you know, you should have momentum. But if you fail, like Raheem Kassam has said in one of his articles in his new magazine, and he knows Nigel better than you or I, he says, if you don't win that test, you're going to lose momentum.
Everything needs momentum. But we must remember as well that everybody likes to back a winner. And also, look at how we did in Peterborough at the EU elections. Now, of course, they're not a direct kind of indicator, but we can say for some certainty that we've taken a huge share off Labour, you know, in Peterborough, and that the numbers are looking good. The bookies have got us odds on. We've got a fantastic candidate, and all of the rest of us MEPs who've been elected, we're not resting up. I'm hitting Peterborough on Saturday. We're going to be there all day campaigning, leafleting, and we are determined to get this guy over into Westminster, and then we begin planning for a general election.
What do you personally make of the 12 people? Don't bother going through all of them, it'll bore me to death, but what do you make of the 12 people who want to be the leader? I made the point in an article the other day, it's kind of irrelevant which one of them becomes the leader, because actually Nigel is going to have his hands on the levers of power, just like the DUP did in this government.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that list and I just see a bunch of uninspiring, you know, kind of has-beens, really. None of them excite me. None of them would excite me enough to vote for them, I don't think, if I wasn't involved in my own movement. I'd vote for none of these people. I think apathy is the enemy here.
But what about the problem, therefore, Comrade Corbyn could get into number 10? Or do you not buy into that?
Well, the greatest announcement that we have had was this morning, front page of the Daily Mirror, Jeremy Corbyn, we want a second referendum. We are a party of a people's vote. We're like, yes, in that case, we will take the 5 million Labour voters who also voted to leave. We'll have you right now. Come here. Please, we'll put the kettle on.
So you don't fear Corbyn getting in. It looks like if there is a general election, and let's face it, Nigel's put them on advance warning, saying if there isn't a deal by October the 31st, he'll take them in. But I think this government's going to collapse before then, because despite what happened this week in the last week in the EU elections, The EU problem is still there, Martin, and the Conservatives are divided, Labour are divided on it. Surely the government's going to collapse and an election is going to come sooner rather than later.
I mean, if you're a gambling man, I think October looks like a possibility, but also don't forget that both of these parties at the moment would be extremely vulnerable to losing a general election. The Tories would be obliterated. I mean, they'd be obliterated.
Well, they're not going to do it then, are they, if they can help it? But what I'm trying to say is they haven't dealt with the problem of the DUP. They haven't dealt with the problems within their own party. You know, what happens next is, you know, there's going to be another debate in Parliament about the EU. No one's going to say, yes, we'll leave on WTO. The government's going to collapse. And when it collapses, are you ready?
Well, we're currently recruiting MP candidates. We need 650 for a full ticket. We've had well over double that amount already come forward. And we are seeing lots and lots more quality candidates coming forward because of the EU results. And many of the MEPs are also looking to stand as MPs. I haven't made my mind up yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Is that the plan? People like you then would try and become MPs?
That is certainly what a lot of the elected MEPs and those who weren't elected, you know, are thinking about doing. So we've got that bedrock in place. But it's about targeting the right areas and, you know, forming a full ticket. But make no mistake, we are gearing on a war footing. If a general election comes, then we're going to fight it.
OK, just before we go on to that, let's just quickly talk about Burko. He says today in Washington, this parliament can do as this parliament thinks fit. He's not for leaving, and he's also no longer going to resign. He's going to stop anything that you lot try to do.
Yeah, and there's no greater figurehead, really, of the fact that our parliament is anti-democratic than John Burko. You know, we have a guy sort of wrapped in ermine fur with his crown on, you know, sort of sat in his velvet chair, you know, basically flicking his fingers at ordinary people. And it exemplifies what's wrong with our politics and the fact that one man can overturn the will of 17.4. He can't be replaced unless there's a general election. So I would say the simple answer to this is to bring on a general election, to bring on loads of Brexit Party MPs, and we boot this old spiv into touch.
OK, if you were going to have a general election, obviously manifesto is important. Let's just talk about some of the big issues that you think should be involved. We've only got a few minutes left. Let's start with the HS2. Would HS2 get scrapped, as far as you understand it, if Brexit were in power?
HS2 is a financial white elephant, George Osborne's vanity project. We've said repeatedly that we're dead against it. Everywhere that we've been, particularly the West Midlands, where I've stood, they are united in their hatred for it. It's a vehicle for getting wealthy Londoners to and from London quicker, and it bypasses the heartlands. Yeah, it's a dead duck.
So it'll go. What about the House of Lords? Would you abolish the House of Lords?
Nigel mentioned that in his Telegraph column yesterday. He thinks that they're politically obsolete. So that's certainly something that we seem to have our sights on.
And finally, the BBC.
Do you know what? One of the biggest topics when we were doing street walkabouts across the West Midlands was the BBC. The public are seething about the BBC. And that is certainly, if we start talking to our members about what they want to talk about, you can rest assured that the BBC licence fee will be on their agenda for sure.
So is that licence fee being slashed completely? Is it the BBC being partly privatised? Is it about it cutting it down to size? What is it?
The devil will be in the detail, and that will be announced in the policy platform soon. Keep your eye out for that. That will be coming. It's incredibly exciting times.
And just before you go, being realistic, if we had a general election, what would you say is a realistic target for Brexit seats? How many seats?
I can't do the Mystic Megs. I can't do the Mystic Megs, John. But, you know, we are very confident that with the right people in the right place, we're a serious force to be reckoned with. We've seen, you know, from the EU results, you know, where we're successful and where we're wanted. You know, we've got parts of the country that turn out 65% Brexit Party. Now, you're not telling me if we put the right person in those seats, we're going to take seats. You know, we've got momentum, we've got quality, you know, we've got the will of the people behind us, and we've got our eyes set right to the top.
Fascinating talking to you. That's Martin Daubney. He's the new MEP for the West Midlands for their Brexit Party. I'll be back next week. We'll be shooting from the lip with another great guest. Thanks for joining me today. This is John Gaunt. This is Sputnik International.
Shooting from the lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.